This is The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, the group stage of the World Cup is over. So what is next? Joining me today on The Pulse, the bleary-eyed people who, no doubt, have been losing sleep since the matches began a couple of weeks ago. Jamie Ho, chief editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk, and Ramesh William, deputy editor, also from Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk. Now, of course, here's something practically the whole world of fans has been buzzing about in the last few days. Holders Germany, we saw them sensationally crash out on Wednesday. One of the biggest shocks in tournament history, people say. They failed to make it past the opening round for the first time since 1938. What do you make of this, Ramesh?
It was a shock, especially in the manner in which they went out too. But, you know, they can only blame themselves. Against South Korea, they were nothing but complacent. They made a lot of changes that weren't needed. A lot of strange decisions from Joachim Löw. But going into the tournament, I didn't think that they would go very far to begin with.
So you saw it coming, or is this just hindsight?
I wouldn't say that.
Ramesh's famous 2020 hindsight.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't say, not in the manner of how they crashed and burned, but definitely they weren't going to defend the title. That's for sure. Simply because on the
Why
form
not?
They were in, and the kind of players that Joachim Löw chose to stick with as well, showed that he wasn't very keen on some of the young, quicker, enterprising players, and kept faith with a cabal of players that won him the World Cup. And that's his prerogative, but he should have been a bit more flexible in terms of team selection. And ultimately, sticking with the likes of Khedira and Ozil and a couple of others just did Germany in.
So you were not shocked?
I was shocked that they went out to South Korea because they had come back so well in their second game against Sweden. I thought they played very well to come from behind, force the game into a last-minute win. And I thought from there, all the mistakes Coach Löw did in the opening game against Mexico, where Ozil was pedestrian and Khedira didn't do much and all that, he dropped them for the second game. That worked. And for some strange reason, he brought those two jokers back for the third game, and they were ineffective. And you know, when you start making halftime substitutions, which is what he did, that's an admission that he did get his starting 11 wrong.
Jamie?
Yeah, but it's funny how football turns on just one game, right? Because if you look at it, as Ramesh said, after two games, they were actually in pretty all right shape. People sort of thought that they would have gotten over the first game blip over Mexico, and things started looking sort of more normal, if you would say so, right? And actually, after two games, the war and gloom was actually targeted at Argentina, and everyone sort of figured that Argentina was actually already out by that stage in time, although mathematically they weren't. So, but then again, in one game, things changed. And I think I would say more that it was just quite shocking, not in the three games as a whole, in just how shocking Germany were in that final game against South Korea. The first two games, you sort of saw them maybe not performing as where they should, but I think it was the last game where they probably choked under the pressure of it all. And yes, of course, the team's selection probably wasn't the greatest, but it was, you know, just that one game. And I think most football teams these days, you can give them one game where it's totally horrible, and this was probably it for them.
They're human after all, right? Yeah. Okay, what else stood out aside from Germany's loss?
Well, there have been some pretty good games, a lot of goals. I do fear, however, as the tournament goes into the knockout phase, you're going to see an emergence of very cagey football, which is what happened in 2014. 2014, you had this similar burst of goals, and the number of goals scored in the opening round was at a record high for recent World Cups, and then everybody just went into their shells once the round of 16, you know, began. But yeah, I think for the opening round, I mean, you had some classic standout matches like Portugal, Spain, which 3-3, fantastic 3-3 draw. Germany's game against Mexico, even if it only had one goal in it, was another pick, another highlight.
Why?
Just end-to-end action, the fact that Mexico should have won by four, maybe five goals, were just quite wasteful in their finishing, and the fact that, you know, Germany were at sixes and sevens, and sometimes, and this was a clear underdog, Mexico being a clear underdog. It's always fun when you go into a World Cup to see the defending champions being given the runaround, and so that was fun. And again, Germany v Sweden, where Toni Kroos scored pretty much deep into injury time. I thought that was another tremendous game. So, yeah, I think we saw a lot of excellent games, interesting games. The use of VAR made it even more entertaining and more entry.
VAR, by the way, is the Video Assistant Referee System. Some people call it VAR as well.
VAR, yeah.
And we'll talk more about that in a while. Yeah. But Jamie, what else stood out for you?
You know, what stood out for me was actually Japan.
Yes.
And for very funny reasons. I mean, after the game with Senegal, everyone's just sort of talking again about how, oh, their fans are great. They were picking up their trash after as they were leaving the stadium and all that. And Japan actually did play pretty well through the tournament. And they probably worst game was then the last game, right, where they lost. And I was watching it, and it was really quite disappointing. But funnily enough, again, they lost, but then they qualified in the end, even though they were level on points. And why did they qualify? Fair play, right? They were exactly identical goal difference, identical goal scored. Yeah. And to see a team like Japan, of all teams, at that stage, just go on to the next stage, primarily because of fair play, was really quite poetic, if you ask me. It was just like, you know, I mean, it shows that, well, sometimes in sports, the good guys do win every now and then. And it's not just about, you know.
Sometimes only, yeah.
Sometimes. And then hopefully they'll do a little bit better. I mean, coming from Asia, it was great to see South Korea beat Germany but not qualify. But it was sort of, again, extra poetic that you see an Asian team lose but still qualify. So I thought that was quite neat last night.
Japan's been pretty interesting. I mean, if you're on the topic of this team, because with Germany, how I was pretty critical of the coach sticking with the older players, Japan is a pretty old team. And what happened before the tournament was you had this coach who wanted to introduce new blood and results weren't forthcoming. So the FA sacked him and then put in a Japanese coach who then brought in all these old players who've played in various leagues in Europe and have played at previous World Cups. And they've come in and it sort of has a dad's army feel to it. And they look good. They have a lot of cohesion. They have a lot of good movement. They look fit for an older team. And especially in their first game against Colombia, they really wanted to win. They really wanted to force the issue. They weren't scared. And in an opening game of a World Cup, that's very credible because you don't see that very often. A team going all out, being extra offensive and playing high up the field and saying, you know what, doesn't matter if we lose.
What was quite interesting was you see the fitness levels in both the Japanese team and the South Korean team. You see them really from the time they would kick off to the final minute, they were at it, you know, no matter what the score.
Korea's two goals were deep into injury time or in the 90th minute and showed that they were still pressing the issue, even if they were outplayed for quite a lot of their games.
Jamie, earlier you mentioned the Japanese picking up litter at the stadium and things like that. Now, they do this every year, every time. But aside from the action on the field, what else would you say this World Cup is bringing forth in terms of the spirit of the game or the spirit of the spirit of people from all over the world coming together in Russia? Anything?
I like how South American fans have just descended en masse on various Russian cities. I think they've been tremendous. I think if you watch Colombia play or Peru play, they've really taken over the cities. And in the stadiums themselves, it looks as if it's a home game for them. I mean, we saw this at the South American World Cup in Brazil, where the Colombians took over stadiums and all that. But that was, you know, just crossing the border, just neighboring countries. But this one, you really had to fly halfway across the world to be in Russia. It's a lot of money. You know, most South Americans, they're not very rich. And you hear a lot of stories of people just selling their homes and borrowing money and selling their cars and using their children's education, university.
I don't know how responsible that is.
You know, and for Peru especially, I mean, a lot of them, I thought what was quite heartwarming, a lot of them brought their children with them, and these were like 3-4 year olds.
And get them started early.
So there's that, and also because there was a theme in what they were trying to say, and this was, you know, I don't know when Peru will be in the World Cup again, so I want my children to see the team in the flesh.
Maybe they just couldn't find a babysitter.
Been great. And it's made the World Cup really fun because I think the last 3-4 World Cups, there was a concern that the atmosphere within the stadiums was getting more sterile simply because with tickets getting so expensive. Only a certain group of people, the more affluent, could afford it and may not necessarily
That's a bit of a problem in Brazil. Yeah. I remember. Yeah.
May not be the most, you know, middle class, comfy middle class people just sitting down there eating hot dogs.
That's an Arsenal stadium.
May not be the best like for creating, you know, this explosive atmosphere.
So what has changed since then to bring about these changes?
I really don't know. I mean, but you just
tickets are still expensive, right?
Tickets are still expensive, but I think people just saying, you know, let's just spend the money. And let's just make the effort.
Let's rob our children of their education funds.
And also, what's interesting also, and I'm not sure with the other FAs, but the South American FAs do subsidize certain travel arrangements from what I know. So whether they are chipping in with travel costs or helping them find hotels at a certain subsidized rate and thereby giving an incentive for their fans to travel. So that has helped. Not sure how many other FAs are doing that. Okay. So Russia have been very good hosts, I think.
Yeah. I was going to say, actually, despite all the... Well, there was some sort of fear as to hooliganism and security and stuff like that. But I think from the sounds of it, it's been pretty good so far. And the security seems to be fine. Fans seem to be getting along fine. The only sort of weird news is maybe that beer supplies maybe starting to dwindle, you know.
That's major problem.
But you know, it doesn't seem to be that bad. And I think overall it's been pretty good so far in this group stage.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the very pleasant things. Now to the perhaps not so pleasant things. And that's where VAR or VAR comes in, the video assistant referee system. This is the first World Cup using video replays. Although, of course, we must note that goal line technology was successfully used in Brazil 4 years ago. So what sorts of problems has it posed so far? I remember, Ramesh, the last time we talked about this, you said there could be issues. What are you seeing? How are they materializing?
Well, The simple brief for VAR was to cut down, just to remove the injustices in football.
Yeah.
And on that count, I think it's done that. There have been some kinks in implementation, in interpretation from the referees of certain fouls and incidents. Mm. But on the whole, I think VAR has done an okay job during the World Cup. I still am of the view that it shouldn't have been introduced at this World Cup. I don't think enough associations use it in domestic football. It's not been used at the highest levels of the game. The FA Cup in England has used it for some rounds. The Bundesliga has had it for, I think, two seasons, if I'm not wrong. One season, I think. But yeah, at this level, it's a cold debut. And I think it should have come on in 2022. But that said,
well, you said it hasn't really dampened the game.
I'm of a different view from Ramesh, because I think, firstly, I think it's been quite positive, right? I think some of the things that it has probably removed, maybe a lot of the cheating and the diving, perhaps, I think that may subconsciously have sort of changed behavior a little bit with the players. But in terms of when it should have been sort of rolled out as well, I would say maybe it's a bit of the inverse, in that maybe it was necessary that you roll it out at the highest stakes level. That's where you really need to look at it into such microscopic detail, right? That's where games really hinge, fates hinge, everyone's watching. And therefore, there's a certain degree of theatricalness to it, right? You know, the referee running to the TV and you're like, oh my God, it's the last minute. Everyone gets very excited. It's because it's a World Cup. Can you imagine doing it? It was like third round of the FA Cup. I mean, who cares, right?
No
whatever,
cares,
you know? So I think that maybe if you looked at it that way, it really adds to the excitement of the game. It becomes almost like a pseudo basketball game thing where people sort of last minute maneuvers and all this kind of technical thing that go into it. So I think it was not a bad decision. It's added a certain element of excitement that we had never seen before.
Well, it is here to stay, so
and most of the decisions have been okay, because and the interesting thing is that it's not just 100% computers doing it as well. It's human beings interpreting it.
And the referee has the final call.
Yeah,
right?
So it's I mean, it will still sort of sort itself out, but it's not a bad first step, if you ask me.
Okay, considering the state of play now in general, which are the matches to watch? Which ones will you guys be watching?
France-Argentina this weekend is a standout. Yeah. It could go either way. It could be a total stinker.
I think it's probably going to be 0-0 and then penalties or something
Or it could be one for the ages. Just before the World Cup, I sort of said Uruguay were the dark horses, and they look like they've done okay and they look like they could go deep into the tournament, and they face Portugal this weekend. I see Uruguay going through. So those are the two standouts from this weekend. Some of the other games, I think Croatia, Denmark, there's a potential for some nice flair football from the two European sides. And Colombia, England, that could be quite interesting as well. I think Colombia played well in one game where we saw their full potential come through, but James Rodriguez, which is their sort of their talisman, went off injured yesterday. It's unclear if he would come back for the next round. And, you know, they are a much depleted side without him, even if they do have like the likes of Cuadrado or Quintero and Falcao up front. But it's when James is on form, he does pull all the strings. And yeah.
Jamie, where do you stand?
Well, just to be a little bit different.
You don't have to be different for the sake of it.
No, but one of the things that people have laughed at me, because in a little office pool, I'm probably one of the few people who put Switzerland into the pool, right? People were wondering, what the hell does Jamie know about Switzerland? Why has he put Switzerland there?
Didn't you used to live there?
Yeah. So
he does know something.
There's a slight soft spot. But, you know, looking at
what do you know that we don't, though?
So looking at the Swiss team over the years, you know that they are very, very workmanlike. Okay, they may not be the most
flamboyant
or flair, but they are very, very efficient. I mean, it comes with the culture, right? And the defense is always good. They don't score many goals, neither do they let in many goals. But when you see a few elements of creativeness enter the team, right? Granit Xhaka and Shadan Shaqiri is getting a bit better with age as well. Then you sort of see that maybe there's a slight change in the dynamic. I see them hopefully getting beyond this and then the next as well, because if they win against Sweden, they'll play either England or Colombia.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if England gets past Colombia, I personally don't see them getting beyond that as well, quarters.
So it's interesting because Sweden, Switzerland, Colombia or England, one of those will get to the semis.
Exactly, precisely. So, it's really, you know, 50-50 between all pairs of them. So it's going to be interesting from that part of the bracket. So I'm looking forward to maybe Switzerland as the dark horse.
I think that's something that will definitely get people up and listening. For once, they'll watch the match involving Switzerland. So all the best to those of you who have money on any of these teams and more great
but
World Cup days.
Do it responsibly.
Of course. We must have the PSA at the end, the public service announcement. So thanks so much, both of you, for joining me today. Jamie Ho, Chief Editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk, and Ramesh William, Deputy Editor, also from our Digital News Desk. Many thanks for joining us on The Pulse.